It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
Another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast, and finally, after a long wait and a misstep that nobody saw coming, we're talking Southeastern Conference football for the Missouri Tigers, and that means a trip to Columbia, South Carolina, and the Gamecocks. Steve Spurrier, Dylan Thompson, and everybody else waiting. Chris Clark, GamecockCentral.com, joins us. Chris, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Gabe. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, appreciate you taking some time, and I'm just going to be honest. Coming from this Columbia, absolutely nobody knows what to expect out of this Missouri team. I would imagine it's somewhat similar in South Carolina right now.
Well, it is to a degree, because I think some of the issues that everybody thought or knew that South Carolina would have on the defensive side of the ball going into this season, they've been there, but they've just been there on a much larger scale than anyone anticipated. And that's what happens when you play. Look, they played three pretty doggone good offensive teams the first 3 weeks. But there's still issues there that playing against anybody will get you in trouble. And we saw that against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's, whatever the opposite of an explosive offensive team is, that's what Vanderbilt's been. And South Carolina still had some issues against them. Now, Vandy put up 34 points. 14 of those were, kick return touchdowns. And again, that's another thing South Carolina's got to get corrected. So there have been some issues that have cropped up. The offense, I think, has been pretty good for the most part. They've had some inconsistency, but we thought this was a team that would have to have the offense carry them at times, and that's been the case so far this year. But it has been a little bit of a wild one. Every game they've played, with the exception of that Texas A&M loss, has pretty much been a tight game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Chris, I've tweeted it, I've linked it on our board, and I've told anybody I've talked to this week that if you have 6 minutes and 20 seconds, you have to watch Steve Spurrier's press conference from last week. You've been around Spurrier long enough to know. I'm assuming there was some method to the madness. He's sending messages to his team with that one, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and he does that a lot. He was not happy with the performance, and that was just one of those situations where, every now and then there's just something that happens in a game that really, really peeves the head ball coach, and it was one of them. I mean, and that would make anybody upset to give up two kick returns for a touchdown, and it was sort of the final straw for him. He sort of finally said, look, we've given up, three in the past five games dating back to the bowl game last year, and we haven't run one back in years, and that's basically what he said in the press conference, that something's going on here. And, he was so mad, he said, I'm taking over kick coverage, and then sort of backtracked that on Monday and said, well, I'm just going to be assistant on it. So he was pretty upset with it. And, obviously anybody would be upset with a performance like that. So it's something that they've got to get fixed. And, again, with the defensive stuff, he's made some comments about that. And everybody knows that South Carolina is not as talented on that side of the ball as they have been, but they still want to, correct some of those things, and they still want to play better on offense too.
Yeah, what is the biggest defensive issue in your mind? I mean, I know South Carolina doesn't have a lot of sacks. I think they're on pace for like 15 this season. The secondary, we all knew, was a question mark coming in. Which of those two is a bigger problem, or can you separate them?
It's hard to separate them, because when you look at defending the pass, those things go hand in hand. A brilliant pass rush can sort of help cover up secondary issues, or vice versa. It's very, very important to get pressure up front. And so those are the two areas we knew South Carolina would struggle in. But again, it's just been on a bigger scale than anyone expected. So, it's a bad recipe when you have a young, inexperienced secondary and not much pass rush. I mean, that's just asking for a disaster. And then you throw in that on top of that, the first two tests of the season that South Carolina had to test out, the pass rush in the secondary was Texas A&M and East Carolina, facing the air raid. So that's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Now there were not any good things against A&M. You could certainly say that. There were some okay things against East Carolina, some good things. There's still some bad plays. But shoot, looking back now, holding those guys to 23 points after they beat Virginia Tech and they hung 70 on North Carolina last weekend, that looks like a win, I would say.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I mean, that looks like a better win now. But still, you know, it's not just, okay, the secondary or, okay, the pass rush. It's, you know, tackling in space and things like that. I mean, South Carolina had Vanderbilt third and goal, and they just missed a tackle in the middle of the field, and it turned it into a touchdown. There have been plays where they just haven't found the ball in the air. They've just got to clean up some of those things, some of those third and longs that they've given up through the air and things like that. And they're still shuffling in the secondary, and they're still playing a lot of guys up front trying to find the right combinations.
Last one on the defense, and then we'll move over to the other side of the ball. But I don't know if you watched Missouri's game last week or not. They gave up 11 tackles for loss to Indiana. They have two new starters and a guy moving positions on the offensive line coming into Williams-Brice this week. I guess you would term it weakness against weakness up front when Missouri has the football. But do you think this is a chance for South Carolina's defensive line to get a little bit healthy?
Well, that's possible when you look at it. And, you know, now if you had asked me that question last year or the year before with Missouri having, you know, some injuries and from what I understand from reading your stuff, gave a little bit of more inconsistency than would have been thought coming into this season, I would say that Mizzou's in trouble. You know, but this season with there's no, you know, Ingram, Clowney, Quarles, you know, Devin Taylor, Chaz Sutton, those guys aren't up front anymore, and they haven't been. So, you know, again, the talent gap is pretty evident. South Carolina has solid players up there, but pass rushing is not the forte. And I know Missouri can run the ball and they can pass it, but the biggest thing for USC up front is not even to get sacked, but just to generate some pressure sometimes, not to give Matty Mock all day in the pocket. And another big point of emphasis, not to let Matty Mock break the pocket, run out, find guys downfield like he's so good at doing, or scramble out of the pocket and pick up extra yards on third down or really on any down. So, yeah, maybe with some of those issues, it's a chance for USC to rebound a little bit, try to have a better game and get some confidence, because certainly, you know, they played a couple really good offensive lines this season in Texas A&M and Georgia.
Yeah, talking with Chris Clark, GamecockCentral.com, and switching sides of the football. Chris, I heard that the Cleveland Browns have a bye week, which means Connor Shaw will be in Columbia, South Carolina this week. I just want to set Missouri fans at ease. There's no way Steve Spurrier can play him on Saturday, right?
I don't think so. you know, there's no legal way he could do it. Whether or not they try to sneak him on with some sort of mask or something like that, I'm not sure. He's certainly I have a feeling Missouri fans are not huge fans of Connor Shaw, you know, but that's just a guess.
Yeah, there are some bad memories associated there. But on a serious note, though, Dylan Thompson, I mean, he's been pretty much everything you would want him to be filling in after Shaw left, hadn't he?
He has, you know, and to an extent. I mean, I think he's had a good year so far. The one thing that is always the key for Dylan, and this is the key that we thought coming into this season, is just him taking care of the football. You know, he's a different player than Connor Shaw, but out of the many things that Connor brought to the table, maybe the best one, aside from his ability to, you know, scramble for some extra yards or first down, just his leadership. I mean, it goes on and on. But a huge thing he brought to the table was taking care of the football. He just didn't turn it over very often. I mean, one interception last year, you don't get that, you know, period. And so it would be unreasonable to expect Dylan to have that kind of year. And with him being a little bit more of a gunslinger, taking more shots, we knew, hey, the interception total is going up this year. But the question is how many. And so that's been a key for him, just not putting the ball in danger, taking good care of it. And he's done pretty well with that so far. Looking back at some of the games, there have been two or three balls that really could have been picked off that have not been. And he almost had a really costly one against Georgia, otherwise played extremely well in that game. So he's just got to, you know, keep settled in. And if the offensive line, which has been good this season, given him time, then he's showing that he's very, very capable of making the throws if he can just stay consistent and take care of the football.
Couple more for you, Chris. Mike Davis, I know he was banged up early in the year, 66 yards a game so far, not the numbers people would expect, although Brandon Wilds, when you combine the two of them, they're well over 100 a game. How's South Carolina's rushing game, and is Davis the kind of guy that he, to me, is the kind of guy he could go for 150, 200 any game?
Yeah, he could, and he's just been banged up. I mean, I don't really know, and it's really hard to tell because if you ask Mike, he says, what injury? You know, I'm not hurt. I don't know what you're talking about. But it's pretty evident. I mean, late last year, he was banged up. This season, he's had, you know, rib injuries, some lower body injuries. He's just not looked 100% with a few exceptions. But, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, he's a guy that's very, very capable of breaking off big runs, of having big games. But one thing USC did want to do coming into this season was, you know, to be able to keep Mike healthier for the stretch run was to split some carries a little bit more. And Brandon Wiles is a guy that's had some good games during his career, had a really good game against Georgia. USC also has Sean Carson and David Williams. And now Williams is a redshirt freshman who is one of those guys, and you probably have him over there in the other Columbia too, where fans just clamor for him to play more and more and more. And, you know, he scored his first career touchdown against Vandy. He's a 6'1", almost 230-pounder with 4.4 speed, so you can see why. So Wiles has been a little bit banged up. He's expected to play, but Williams could get a few more carries too. And with South Carolina, the sort of the theme for the running game has been, you know, a big offensive line, and they've been really good late in games at running the football, lining up in two tight end, three tight end sets, and pounding the football and sort of wearing guys down. That's really been their MO, and they've really been at their best later in games doing that.
All right, Chris, I just got 30, 60 seconds left. I've said all along we're going to wake up on October 12th after Missouri and Georgia play, and we're going to know who the SEC East champion is going to be. South Carolina already has one in its pocket against Georgia. So if I make you tell me today on October 12th, who do we wake up and say is winning the SEC East, which one of those three teams is it?
Missouri, South Carolina, or Georgia.
Because I don't think anybody else has a chance.
Yeah. I mean, and you never know. Out of those three, you know, Gabe, I think because of South Carolina's schedule, as of today, even though South Carolina beat Georgia, you know, it would sort of be tough to go against Georgia, but I'd say it's between South Carolina and Georgia. I think every single team there has question marks. South Carolina's got to go to at Auburn. That's a tough matchup. And then they got to go to Florida. They still got to go to Kentucky. I mean, they have a lot of really tough games left, and some really tough matchups. Put it this way, none of them would surprise me.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It's going to be fun. I appreciate it, Chris, and look forward to Saturday night. It should be a little bit crazy in Williams-Brice.
Sure, thanks a lot, Gabe. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
All right, we're now going to take a little more of a national view of Missouri and of the Southeastern Conference, and we're going to welcome in Russ Mitchell, the lead SEC columnist for College Football News, and also recently started up SEC14.com. First of all, Russ, appreciate you joining us, and second of all, tell us, before we get into talking about college football, tell us about the new site, because I know Missouri fans are always looking for SEC news.
Sure, actually, we get a lot of folks visiting from Missouri. We can track. And so we're kicking the tires and lighting the fires. Basically, the SEC's, the fans of the SEC, we've discovered at College Football News, the fans of the SEC end up being the majority of the visitors to the main site. So we decided to launch a site specifically just for SEC fans. And, you know, one of the problems I have when I'm trying to write a column on the SEC is trying to find all the resources, all the rosters, depth charts, injuries, coaches. So we put that all in one place right there on the main page for you to be able to access everything for every team and then all the entertainment and stuff. So we're excited about it.
And that is for fans that want to find it, SEC, then the number 14.com. And Russ, let's get right into it. Your take, kind of like I said, the 30,000-foot view of what happened to Missouri last week.
Well, you know, I watched that game. Unlike most folks in the SEC who turned it off, I think that Missouri was clearly, in my opinion, looking ahead to the next week. And these are young players that you're talking about. And I mean, it was sloppy, 10 penalties, a bad interception, receivers not really running the right routes, Mock had an off day, you know. But to me, the core concern for this team is its run defense. You know, last year Missouri was great because they were the second best run defense in the conference. This year they're allowing 5 yards a carry against, you know, 5 yards a carry against Toledo, 5 yards a carry against Indiana. We're not even in the meat of the season yet, right, and this run defense is allowing 5 yards a carry, and that should give every Missouri fan pause.
Especially with Mike Davis, Todd Gurley, and a bunch of other guys coming up. You know, my take, I know Missouri's not as bad as they were last week. At the same time, they don't have a win over anybody that's beaten an FBS team. And most SEC teams have played a game or two. South Carolina's going to be halfway done with their conference schedule. I mean, is there any team out there that you feel like maybe is more unknown than Missouri?
No, well, you know, I mean, you ask about Texas A&M. I know they had the one big game against South Carolina, but that was an excellent matchup for them. South Carolina's secondary is weak, and Mike Davis was injured and not able to run on that A&M defense. A&M, after that, has played Lamar, Rice, and SMU, which sounds like a food group. You know, I challenge anybody out there to tell me what the mascot is for Lamar. And so you would think if that's what they've played and if their defense is, you know, supposedly, I talked to all the folks down in College Station, is better this year, that their run defense would be top 10, and it's not. It's 41st in the nation. They've run against nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more importantly from an AM standpoint, they're almost dead last in the conference in turnover margin, and which, again, given who they've played as well, not unlike Missouri, you would expect them to be much higher in turnover margin. So, you know, I think there are a couple teams, Missouri, A&M, you know, Arkansas has had just that one game against Auburn. Those are probably three of the names that stick out as teams that we don't really know about yet.
All right, now talking about defenses, I was stunned when I started looking at the stats how bad, and I understand they played some good offensive teams, but how bad South Carolina is defensively. And I'm going to dovetail that into, without giving your pick away, I'll let you do that.
Okay.
Is that a reason you might be picking this game the way you might be picking it?
I'm picking Missouri to win this game, and I feel pretty strongly about that. We spoke a moment ago about the weakness, in my opinion, the key weakness right now with this Missouri team is its defense, its run defense. And if this was last year, you would look at that that South Carolina team and you would say, oh, no, here comes Mike Davis. Mike Davis has been pretty banged up so far this year, and Georgia's rushing offense is only 11th in the SEC. They're averaging only 150 yards a game rushing.
Wow.
I know. It's interesting. And, you know, so I think they really are going to have a difficult time taking as much advantage of that Missouri run defense. Conversely, the greatest weakness right now with South Carolina is that pass defense. They are woeful. And I recognize that there's a lot of receivers and some turnover at the receiver position for Missouri. But Mock is a good quarterback. He's getting better with every game, and he's going to pick apart the South Carolina defense. I think Missouri wins on the road.
Wow, that's interesting. As you said before, you might make me feel better about this game, and I might make you feel worse about it. But talking with Russ Mitchell from College Football News, SEC14.com, and Russ, I want to take a few minutes to look around the conference. And actually, you all have a story on your site, which is something I've been talking about with a bunch of people this week, and I really believe there's a good chance it happens. A two-loss SEC champion this year. Just lay out the case for how that happens and why you think it might.
Yeah, Matt Moscona, who does a radio show in Baton Rouge, wrote that for us on SEC14.com. You know, before the season, I would have said that was not likely to happen. But now that the East has proven to be struggling so much. I mean, the East right now is not up to par, certainly not up to par in the West. And I recognize the West, you could argue, I mean, is one of the best conferences, one of the best divisions in all of football. But if you're looking at that West, you know, Alabama has a hellacious schedule still in front of them, you know, and even worse is Auburn. Auburn has to play four ranked teams on the road. Alabama has to play three top 10 teams. And LSU on the road, and you just keep working your way down that list of possible teams. You know, from an Arkansas perspective, all the Hogs fans need to just relax and win a conference game. They're 0-13 in their last 13 conference games, and LSU doesn't have a run defense to save its life. So, but when you look at Ole Miss, Mississippi State, A&M, Alabama, and Auburn, those are some very horrific schedules. And the margin of difference right now between those five programs is pretty thin. So there's actually, and if you consider that everybody in the East, I think Missouri is the only team that hasn't played anybody, right?
Right.
Everybody else has one loss or close to that. Yeah, everybody has one.
Everybody else has lost an SEC game already, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you're probably the winner of the East is probably going to have two losses. So, we're looking, we have a high probability that we could slip. I'd say at least 50-50 that we end up with two losses in the SEC this year for a champion.
All right, I'm going to make a lot of enemies in SEC towns across the country with this, but here's the scenario I've laid out. If everybody in the West loses two games, or if, say, Alabama or Auburn comes out only one loss, Georgia loses two but wins the SEC East on a tiebreaker, and then Georgia beats the West champ in Atlanta, is it possible we have the first four-team playoff and there's not an SEC team in it?
It would have to play exactly the way that scenario you described plays out. And, you know, when you look at, and I focus on the SEC, but I look around the country as well, nobody is playing football right now as well as the SEC. We had hoped that the Pac-12 would be playing as well, you know, preseason based off of how their last previous two seasons have gone. But the Pac-12 is struggling a bit right now. Outside of Oregon, UCLA can't block with its offensive line. Arizona State's quarterback is banged up, and they're struggling a bit on their defense. USC lost to Boston. I mean, right now the SEC is playing the best football. And to be specific, the SEC West is playing the best football. So if the SEC West carves itself up and we have a one-loss SEC West champ who loses in the conference game, as you pointed out, to a two-loss Georgia team, I think they'll still give – I just would be shocked if you took a one-loss Michigan team who played – excuse me, a one-loss Michigan State team who played nobody and got blown out by Oregon, right? And if you took them over a – let's say a two-loss Georgia team that beat an undefeated Alabama or a one-loss Alabama, I'd still think you have to take – talk about controversy.
And the howls of SEC bias will be heard across the country if and when that happens.
Well, you know, there's something to be said for membership, right? And the SEC has played in the last eight national championship games. There's something to be said. There's a reward you get for that kind of consistency.
All right, Russ, I appreciate your time. I'm going to wrap you up and put you on the spot and hold you to nothing. I've said we're going to wake up on October 12th and know who wins the East, but you've already given me your pick for this weekend. So if you have to pick the SEC title game today, taking into account schedules and all that, which two teams do you think get in?
I've been a little bit disappointed that Auburn's not been as crisp offensively so far this season, but I still think Auburn ends up coming out of the West. I think that I've been impressed with Alabama, and Blake Sims right now is the best quarterback in the SEC statistically, which is that young man deserves a lot of credit, but I still think Auburn can sneak past Alabama and Tuscaloosa. Out of the East, brother, you can flip a coin right now. I mean, we still don't know enough. I'd probably take Georgia, and you'd be looking at Auburn, Georgia in the championship game.
All right, Russ, appreciate the time, man. I've loved college football news for years, and definitely will encourage everybody to check out the new site as well.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the time. Russ Mitchell, again, college football news, but SEC14.com. Guys, I just discovered the site about a week or two ago because of Russ Mitchell on Twitter, and he's a great follow. It's a really good site. I don't often encourage people to go to sites that are not affiliated with the Rivals.com network, but I'm telling you, if you want a take on the SEC and you want to know everything going on at all these different schools, they have guys contributing from across the country. It's a really good site, SEC14.com. Check it out. All right, we're going to bring it back to Columbia, Missouri now, and we're going to talk to a man that's seen everything here for the last couple years, Howard Richards, the color analyst on the Tiger Radio Network. Howard, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Gabe. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Listen, I heard earlier this week Mike Kelly set to call his 250th consecutive game. So at what year will you be at 250? How long you got to go?
If I'm still alive, you know, my mind doesn't compute that high, Gabe. So.
There you go.
I'm just worried about this week and this game.
I got you. The question.
And all it says is that Mike's an old man. So
yeah, there you go. There you go. He's older than me, so that makes me feel good. The question I've started with everybody on this podcast. I mean, what happened last week?
Plain and simple, Missouri did not come prepared to play. I know that's a broad, ambiguous statement, but, you know, let me just first clarify this. You know, I've heard people use the term, well, maybe they were looking past Indiana at South Carolina. I will say this, and I don't know that there's ever been any player that will tell you that They look past an opponent to look at the subsequent opponent. That just doesn't happen. At least it never happened with me. Now, what can happen often is if you look at an opponent on your schedule and you think, well, you know, maybe this is an easy victory. And then you get into that game week or the week of preparation prior to that, and you start to maybe go through the motions. You don't work nearly as hard as you should. Or you see things on video as you're studying your opponent and all their tendencies, and you may see a guy, an opponent, have an off day. Well, here's the thing. We've all done it, and I admit to it, I've done it. I haven't done it frequently, but it has been done. You have to prepare. And I learned this a long time ago. You've got to prepare each and every week like you're playing against the best guy that ever put on a football helmet and shoulder pads. And that was always my approach, you know, going forward. I think that's what helped me get to be able to play at a high level every week. Not to say that I played well every week, because it just didn't happen. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. But at least if you go in with the thought that I've prepared to the best of my ability, I took my opponent seriously, your attitude on Saturday or whatever day you line up to play is going to be different. And there could be some of that. I know if you look at the Indiana game tape prior to the Missouri game, you know, maybe against Bowling Green, you probably saw less than stellar effort by Indiana. Clearly Saturday, Indiana came to play, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. They had it. Excellent game plan defensively against Missouri. I mean, they blitzed. They must have blitzed 80% of the time, or maybe even more, maybe 85%. And Missouri did not handle it. I mean, you saw right. Maddie hold on to the ball a little bit too long when he should have been getting rid of the football. He's got to make a quicker decision, either get rid of that football, tuck it and run. But there's places where you just cannot take sacks. And I think he, you know, his decision-making process wasn't good. If you look at a lot of the blitzes that I saw coming right up the middle, I think it's a situation where you've got receivers that can recognize the blitz and cut off their routes and vacate those areas where the blitz is coming from. So now you've got a clean area where you can sit and have your quarterback look for a much shorter option than looking downfield. Because I saw him in almost every occasion on those blitzes looking downfield too long instead of looking to check down or to dump maybe a quick slant across the middle. Getting the tight end involved also, I think, is something that will also help counter that blitz, the blitz action.
That's great stuff, and that's why they pay you the big bucks to analyze the football and me to just kind of write about it. But I am going to play amateur analyst here for a minute, and I've said a few times this week, you can overcome bad special teams play, you can overcome bad play by your wide receivers, your defensive line, you can overcome bad play by your cornerback, or quarterback, I should say. You cannot overcome offensive line play against anybody the way Missouri had it last week. Is that being too simple about it?
No, and if you look at football is really a simple game with complex strategies. And you can make the game as simple as you want to, and you can make it as complex as possible. Offensive line play is where it all starts up front. If you don't have A, you will not have B. There's an old Latin term that we use at the Cowboys, sine qua non. And it translates or interpreted as without which there is nothing. So without the fundamentals blocking up front, you're not going to have any success offensively. And some of the things that I saw when Indiana was rushing three, you get five offensive linemen. You cannot allow three rushers to beat your offensive line. And what I saw Mitch Morse get beat to the inside on a three-man rush. Okay, so that happens. Well, where's the guard? The guard's got to get his head on a swivel and protect that inside. It's easy playing guard play when you're playing against a three-man front, especially if you check and you have no blitzes up the middle. All you've got to do is you've got to check one, tackle, check two, center, or vice versa, depending on the way the play is called. You sit back slightly deeper than your center and your tackle. Anything that comes to the inside your way, you've got it covered. They should never get beat. There should never be pressure from a three-man line.
Well, for anybody who doesn't know, Howard did play offensive line at Missouri and in the NFL and broke it all down pretty well there. And, Howard, going forward to this week, Missouri's got two new starters on that line. Anthony Gotti's out for the season. Connor McGovern moves from tackle back to guard where he played last year. How much of a difference does that make? I mean, regardless of the fact whether these guys are as good, better, or worse than the other guys, just changing that much on the offensive line, going into a place like Williams-Brice Stadium, how much difficulty and concern does that present Missouri?
Well, naturally, anytime you have a changeup along the offensive line, you know, sort of mid-season, it's almost mid-season, the season's a third of the way through, you know, there may be cause for concern. I don't think it's any reason to feel that there's panic. Because you know you've got players, you've got backup players that are there and should be developed in the event your starters get hurt. That's why you have depth. So from that perspective, if you're developing your backup players, there should be, you know, little worry at all. It's when you start mixing guys up from week to week. Well, then you lose your continuity. You lose everything that integrity of that offensive line, you know, that trust factor that you have with a guy that you know is going to be there from week in to week out. So that's the biggest thing. They've got to be able to work side by side and understand, you know, that the guy next to them is going to be there if they get in trouble. So Evan's got to rely on Connor McGovern. Taylor Chappelle's got to rely on Connor McGovern. Connor's got to rely on Taylor Chappelle, who started his first game at right tackle. And I would imagine there's going to be a little bit of anxiety on the part of Taylor Chappelle. If they're smart on offense, they're going to give Chappelle as much help as possible. Either when they get in passing situations, you can chip with a running back or have a tight end stay and assist or bring a rover to that side to help if you get in passing situations, at least from the outset. Give him help early on to get him comfortable at that position. See how the defensive game plan develops throughout the game, and then you can adjust later on. But be prepared from the outset with what you're trying to do in your offensive attack. Give that guy that's new to the situation some assistance. It's not unlike if you're, you know, you switch quarterbacks midstream. Chances are he's not going to come out gunning. He's going to offer up a few running plays, let him hand off, just sort of get his feet wet and let him get acclimated. But ease him into the game, and I think that's the best situation possible. Passing situations, you'll probably see things, you know, like some quick slants or some shorter passes, quick screens, anything just to sort of get him situated before you get in, you know, long passing downs where he's got a guy that's, you know, gunning for him and pinning his ears back and, you know, with an all-out pass rush. So you just want to get him eased into the football game as much as possible.
Just a couple more for you, and I don't know through the week how you do your research, whether you're mostly reading stuff and looking at stats or whether you watch film, but I looked at all the numbers and put together kind of a by-the-numbers story, and it is stunning to me, and I understand they played some good offensive teams, but how bad South Carolina's defense has been. I mean, in looking at South Carolina, do you see a chance for Missouri to right the ship offensively from last week?
Well, I mean, if you look at Missouri's average passing yards, I mean, it's gone down significantly. I think they were at 245. South Carolina's giving up on the defensive side of the ball 311 yards through the air, 168 yards on the ground. So if Missouri can put up those types of numbers, you know, 450 yards plus in the offensive side of the ball, I think they're possibly looking at, you know, victory, assuming everyone else plays well. I mean, you still got a good, very good defensive play. But if the offense can get in there and get the football moved, play better on third downs. Third down is a key for this team. You know, they haven't really been that good in the third down situation. You've got to be able to extend drives, give yourself opportunities to put points on the scoreboard. It's going to boil down to execution. Execution along the offensive line, execution in the receivers. Quarterback's got to do a better job of his reads. Running backs got to block better. They've got to run better. They got to find the daylight. everyone has to do, as Coach Pinkel has said, you've got to do what you do, but you've got to get a little bit extra. And that's what it's going to take to even have a chance to win this football game in South Carolina.
And I actually, I look at this and my head's telling me that I think Missouri has a decent chance. The biggest concern for me is that guy on the other sideline is a very good offensive football coach, and he's going to find a defense's weakness, and I can find this defense's weakness right now. Howard, explain to people that don't know as much about the X's and O's why Missouri struggles so much to defend a screen pass.
From my vantage point, I think, first of all, if you look at how Missouri lines up, there's so much cushion before plays ever even, before the ball's ever even snapped. You've got cornerbacks that are off the ball 7-8 yards. If I were an offensive strategist, I would look at that and say, okay, well, first down, I'm going to quick screen, do some regular screens, a little dump off to the halfback. I'm going to get out there into that flat and make them stop me. I want to see if they have adjusted what they do defensively from last week. Because if they don't adjust, then I need to attack because I can make yards on first down. I can make, I'm almost guaranteed to make 5, 6, 7 yards on first down because they're giving me such a cushion. Now, if I look out there on first down and I see a defensive back that's in press coverage, I'm going to think twice about throwing that screen because, A, he's in position to make a play immediately. But if you're going to give them that opportunity, of course they're going to take it. And you see that's what teams have been so successful at throwing those quick screens, those bubble screens, and even regular screens. They're not covering – linebackers aren't scraping to the outside, especially when your defensive line takes an angle or an inside angle on offensive tackle. There's got to be better support on the outside, and I haven't seen that consistently. And I think that's where teams – or looking at areas that they can exploit with the Missouri defense.
All right, Howard, appreciate you taking some time, man. We'll be listening 6 o'clock Saturday night.
You got it, Gabe. Anytime, man.
All right.
Good talking to you.
Have a good one. Howard Richards, Tiger Radio Network color analyst. He'll be calling the game with Mike Kelly. And I tell you what, folks, I profess I am not a football analyst. I don't break down X's and O's. Those 12 minutes or so, that was great stuff from Howard Richards on offensive line play, on the defensive scheme and why Missouri is so vulnerable to certain plays that it seems to some of us they've been vulnerable to for a few years. Great stuff there. Appreciate Chris Clark. Appreciate Russ Mitchell. 6 p.m. Saturday night. Step one toward not only getting over Indiana, but seeing if Missouri is good enough to make a run at Atlanta once again. We're not going to know if they can get there on Sunday morning. I do think we're going to know if they're good enough to have a chance. So, again, 6 p.m. ESPN. Next week on the podcast, not sure yet. Obviously, without a Saturday game, podcast might be on a bye, too. We may be back. Just depends on what we get lined up in the next 7 days. But thanks for listening now. And at the very worst, be back in 2 weeks talking Missouri and Georgia.